Thank you, Kevin. So if you were with us last week, either in person or online, we talked quite a bit about reflecting on what our stories of faith have taught us about worship. And we together tried to integrate the stories that we've received with the current reality in which we find ourselves. And then we also talked about ways that we recognize that we are called to this place to be in relationship with one another, and of the many ways that we are sent from this place. But all this back and forth, up and down, cords pulling, things not being where they should, all of this back and forth can be a bit overwhelming. I mean, after all, Spirit doesn't necessarily take water breaks or take a time out. The Spirit keeps moving, keeps getting up to holy mischief and good trouble, day in and day out. And it's okay, and honestly, it's perfectly normal. Because we are human, we get tired, we get frustrated, we might even feel overwhelmed with the amount of work that we feel Spirit is calling us to. The weight of the holy work is heavy. And so in pursuing God's work, we still might find ourselves asking, well, who's going to take care of us? We are all called differently. Perfect example is when it's time for us to sing on Sunday morning, I don't see 10 of you racing up here to get to the organ before Sunny does. I would like to see that, but Sunny's got a good spot. We trust that if we see Sunny here, Sunny's going to be where Sunny needs to be, and whether or not we know the tune, she's going to help us through it. A lot of folks here have children or grandchildren, or we've at least seen children before, but not all of us were racing up here to read the story for children's time. All of us at some point in the day use cash, use money, but not all of us are volunteering to be on the financial stewardship team. We all have to eat during the day, but not all of us bake bread for communion. And that's okay. It's not good or bad. It simply is. It's perfectly good and normal that not all of us are trying to do all of the things all of the time that keep this community alive. I mean, could you imagine? Do you know how many groups and things happen just here in this building throughout the week? What if each of us were expected to attend every meeting and every group every time? How many meetings do you think happen throughout the week? And I mean meetings, groups, gatherings, events. Throw it out there. How many meetings do you think happen? 10? Dozen? I went and looked on the calendar. On Sundays alone, there's Godly Play, Youth Coffee, Sunday Worship, Cookie and Coffee Hour. We love coffee and snacks. I'm all for that. Sometimes there's moderator hours, there's a Good Neighbor community concert coming up, there's a new member info meeting that happens periodically on Sundays. On Mondays, there's worship and music team meetings. Tuesdays, the social justice and outreach meeting. Tuesday night fellowship. Sometimes there's exec team. Wednesdays, there's Bible study, ringing the bell. Wednesday afternoon club. Sometimes there's all church meals. Again, love the food. Youth group, adult education, Al-Anon. I stopped counting after that. There's a lot of things that this community gets up to. And I honestly cannot imagine being there every meeting, every time, even though I might want to. I wouldn't want to do that. But is there anyone here that, either here or online, that goes to every meeting every week when it happens? Anyone? No? I'm seeing a couple of your faces like, no, and I'm not going to. What about Jason? You're the moderator? Oh, that's a hard no from Jason. Okay, well, if you can't go, do you send the vice moderator or someone from exec team? No, that's a big no. Okay. What about online? Is there anyone online that's like, yeah, I'm there every time? No, big no's from online too. Okay. All right. Well, okay, so let's imagine we have a beloved disciple among us who is as dedicated as this calendar and were to go to every meeting, every week, every month. I wonder what our reaction would be. when they told us this. You know, would we be so excited and proud? Like, look at you, you go girl, look at you, love that. You must be swimming in coffee instead of blood through your veins. Maybe we'd be worried, I don't know. What invitation might we offer to a congregant, to one of our friends who's spending more hours at church or meetings or other functions? They're spending more time here than maybe with their own family or friends or simply resting. There's a trend among professionals called hustle culture. Many of you heard this before? Hustle culture? Okay, a couple of you, a couple nods. Hustle culture sounds a bit like, I haven't slept more than 5 hours in one night for months. I just need 3 or 4 hours, 2 energy drinks in the morning, and then I'm coffee the rest of the day, and I'm good to go. Or it sounds something like, you know, my schedule is so tight, my phone has to interrupt my bathroom time because I have a presentation in 10 minutes that I need to prepare for. I've really heard that. I've really heard that from folks. Or something like, if my phone isn't ringing or pinging with emails or text messages, I can't relax. I feel like I'm constantly missing something. Yeah, if my phone isn't ringing or beeping, I can't relax. Hustle culture elevates and rewards behaviors that some of us might seem repulsed by. It celebrates ways of overextending ourselves. I work as a chaplain in a Methodist hospital downtown in Des Moines, and one of the floors I work on is a cardiac floor. And there are certain types of events that lead to cardiac episodes. I mean, some's genetic, we can't escape that. But believe it or not, I'm glad you're all sitting down for this, but believe it or not, stress is not good for your heart. In fact, it might make it beat way too fast or way out of rhythm, and then you wind up in a green paper gown looking at me on a Tuesday morning. It is fun for one of us, but I'll let you guess which one. But I have folks that tell me repeatedly how many emails they receive in a day, or yeah, their work hours are fine, but when they're at home, they keep working. I find myself wondering out loud, you know, what would happen if you didn't respond to that email within 10 minutes of it landing in your inbox? What's the worst that could happen? You know, I wonder what message you're sending to your partner or your kids or your friends when you are giving more energy electronically to people who aren't in the room with you. Let's consider our gospel reading for just a moment. Sorry, my thumbs got hustling and I skipped ahead. Sorry about that. Okay, here we go. Can't hustle. Thanks, Brooke. She got it. I was going too fast. Okay, so in our gospel reading, Jesus spent days in the wilderness. He was fasting and praying, and he probably couldn't check his email because the sand and the wind messed up the Wi-Fi signal, so he was off-grid. In this delirium time, he was offered images of prestige and power and fame and authority. He gets a glimpse into the way it could be. Some commentators over the years have argued that these images or these temptations were offers for Jesus to take the easy way out. And that might be. I don't know if I agree with that, at least today. And I'm not saying that I have the final say on what Jesus thought or felt during this time. I won't pretend that. Let me be clear. I'm reading this story today as a white woman in the 21st century. Okay, I'm statistically just shy of being middle-aged. I have professional and personal accomplishments and comforts that allow me and afford me the opportunity to take risks. I can do things I enjoy. I can play. I can rest. And although I've lived paycheck to paycheck most of my life thus far, I've never wondered, can I pay my energy bill or buy groceries? I've always known that there will be a next meal, even if I can't decide what to eat for dinner. Jesus is hungry, and he's invited to turn stones to bread. Wouldn't it be easier, Jesus? I mean, you're so hungry. Wouldn't you just have a little bit of bread? I live paycheck to paycheck. Wouldn't it be nice if I had just a little cushion of cash, you know, so you don't have to feel guilty about eating out once in a while? Wouldn't it be easy if you just had a little bit more? Then Jesus is offered power, control over his schedule, people reporting to him, pick your hours, name your price, Jesus. Make other people do the hard work so that you can work hard enough to relax. Finally, Jesus is asked to take a leap. Trust. You put the work in, put good in, get good out. Again, from my white lady perspective, this sounds a heck of a lot like a multi-level marketing scheme. Right? You know what I'm talking about. You go to the party because your friend wants you to. Maybe you're online and you're looking at all of the products that are going to save your life or make everything easier or better or fix it or something. And then right in the middle of winning a free new, I don't know, mascara or an extra Tupperware, right in the middle of getting something for free, you're offered the opportunity for your own freedom, for your own independence, for your own schedule, and you too can build a little empire of wealth. You can become your own boss. Girl, take control of your life. Don't let your schedule control you. Get yourself back on track. And if you're like me, for a moment, you become enamored with the possibility of an easy way out. I don't need an extra fortune, but man, it would be nice to just have enough, right? Then all you got to do is work hard enough to get a bunch of people reporting to you who can buy into the same vision of the world that you bought into. Work hard enough so that you can relax. And then the hook. You just got to trust. Take a leap. I know it's a lot of money up front, but you'll make that back and then some. You'll be fine. Hustle culture preys on those who are already falling under the weight of a system that is propped up on the lie, there isn't enough. Hustle culture tells us that there isn't enough bread, so we have to go make our own. It says, you're not important unless people report to you. It tells us, you're not really living if you can't take a life-shaking risk. Hustle culture disguises itself behind the mask of just a little bit more. Just one more meeting. Pick up one more shift. Take one more trip. There is nothing easy about living in a world where there's never enough. Because when there's never enough, we are never satisfied. And when we are never satisfied, we can never rest. And when we cannot rest, we will not grow. Jesus was pitched the idea of bigger, better, more power. After the sand and the wind scratched his skin and the sun soaked his being with heat and sweat, Jesus went to his holy place of worship. He was an active member in the community, and so he was invited up front to read from the scrolls. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because God has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release of the captives, to give sight to the blind, and to set the oppressed free. God has sent me here to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Now, this might sound like a hustle gig, right? Like, that's a big list. Setting the oppressed free, giving sight to the blind, like, that's a big list. But instead of going the hustle direction, Jesus points to another way. Jesus calls the community to remember who they are. They are a people of Sabbath rest. Proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor, that phrase gets lost on us in translation. But there were specific tasks that this community was required to do for each other every year, every 7 years, and every seventh year, or 49, every 49 years. If you bought land, it said that in 49 years it would be returned. If you borrowed money, your debt was forgiven. The land was allowed to rest to prevent overfarming. The people were instructed to store up enough food for themselves, and leading up to the year of the Lord's favor, they stored up extra food for those who were unable to work. So when that year of rest came, the idea would be they could share with those who didn't have enough. Jesus tells the gathered community, look, these practices are already within us. We don't have to wait for some magical year. This is happening now. We can share what we have now. We can rest from our work now, and in doing so, we can also free those who have been unable to rest. There's always another way. God isn't asking us to join a scheme. God is asking us to remember that we are human. So then, let's think back one more time to that community calendar. Remember how long that list was? And I got a lot of very, very, very aggressive head shakes of, no, I'm not going to be there for all those meetings. That's just for this community and things that happen in this building. And I know that there's a lot of stuff that this group gets up to that don't happen in this building, like food at first. Food at first, that doesn't happen in here. Mm-mm. The crop walk didn't happen in here. There's a lot of stuff. Amos doesn't happen in here. It happens out there. So, that's a lot. And then on top of that, I think I sent Sunny, how many emails did I send you last week and this week? You know, half a dozen at least? Yeah? I texted Jason a few times to make sure I knew what I was doing. Texted Steve in the office, right? And that's just one person. That doesn't take into account how many times y'all are emailing or calling or texting or checking up on each other. So, how do we care for the community? Well, that's what the pastor's job is, right? That's what the pastors are for. Do we expect pastors Hannah and Betsy to know everything that's happening within the community? Should they have the calendar memorized? More than that, do we expect them to go to every meeting, to be connected to every group, to know every person online and in person? Isn't that what we want? For our pastors to hustle, you know, just a little bit, right? Jesus was invited to turn stones to bread. We're not asking Betsy or Hannah to do that, right? We're not asking our pastors to do that. But maybe, you know, maybe they could turn these empty pews upside down and fill them with a few more people. Maybe families with young kids, I don't know. Just a couple. Jesus was offered authority and control over people. And don't we assume that pastors have authority and control over the church? That's why we throw our problems at them. That's why we email them our complaints, because it's their job to fix it. So the question isn't, do we expect our pastors to hustle? The question is, are we aware of how we expect our pastors to hustle? What expectations do we actually have about their time and their call and their answering of that call? Do we actually know what their office hours are, how much time they need to take meetings to prepare for Bible studies or sermons or do liturgy planning, to write a funeral message, to make visits in the hospital or at home, to return phone calls and emails? Do we assume they will answer every time we call or text? And if we think that they should, do we assume we'll get a response within an hour or 24 hours? It's not the responsibility of the pastors to care for the community. Now, let me be very clear what I mean by this. This community right here has existed long before pastors Hannah and Betsy were called as pastors, right? I'm getting a couple nods. What year was this community a community? When did we decide we're going to do this thing? 1865, somewhere around there, before the 1900s. So I think this community has been around long before pastors Hannah and Betsy were even born. Right? They're not that, I mean, I'm almost middle-aged, but like, they're not that old, are they? No, so this community has existed long before these pastors. And by the grace of God, this community will continue long past the time they finish their call here. That means it is the community's responsibility to care for the community. That means us. We are responsible for one another. This community is known for its extravagant welcome. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. That's embedded into what it means for us to be us. We seek to befriend the stranger in our midst, not to check a box, but because we are genuinely curious to meet the people God has gathered together. And I know this because I was once a stranger here. I sat over there by that window for the first time on a Sunday morning with my spouse over 13 years ago. We tried visiting a few other churches in town, and no one knew we were there, or if they did, they assumed we were broke college kids just wanting a meal. So we never went back. The only reason I wanted to come here at all was because I had worked in a coffee shop and I knew one person that came here and they were super nice to me. And I thought, well, if they're nice, they must hang out with nice people. It was Sunny. Sunny was the one that I thought was interesting and was very kind to me. I was once a stranger here, and you befriended me.
And you befriended me?
Mm-hmm. We were once strangers, and now I text her and say, what do you think of this song? What do you think of this decal for your truck? At a time when there was no settled pastor here, you took care of me and my family. And over the past decade, you've let me also take care of you. You've let me write liturgy. You've let me have a microphone again and again, because you don't learn. That's on you guys. You sat with me, you discerned with me my call to ministry when I went from intern Kelsey Plummer to chaplain Kelsey Plummer to Reverend Kelsey Plummer. That was you. You were there with me. When my dad died, you sent cards, and none of you had ever met him. When my baby was sick and in the hospital, some of you drove all the way down to Des Moines to leave a basket of Sour Patch Kids, wine, and food gift cards on my door. You didn't even ask to come in. You just dropped off your care and your love for me because you knew that we were hurting. You remember my name when I'm not here every Sunday. You see me. I was a stranger, and now you are family. You are beloved community in my life. I wonder what it might be like for us if we were to receive Pastors Hannah and Betsy as strangers. Would we expect them to go to every meeting? Would we expect them to answer our call the second it rings or send us an email response within the hour? Probably not, because that doesn't feel like extravagant welcome. That doesn't feel like care. So how might we care for the pastors as strangers? I imagine we'd offer some grace in the midst of transition while we're figuring things out. We'd include both of them in decision making. And we'd also approach them with ideas, not just problems and complaints, because we want to see them come alive doing the work that brings them joy. Our first reading this morning from Thessalonians isn't written to the church leaders. It's written to the church, which is full of leaders. So I contradicted myself, but you get what I'm saying. The letter instructs the community to care for those in their midst, to engage those who are inactive and encourage the fearful and visit the lonely. We love our pastors when we celebrate their humanness. We dehumanize ourselves and our pastors when we demand that they hustle. We love and care for our community when we practice curiosity when faced with problems, rather than being quick to take offense and passing blame. We care and we honor and respect the community when we name boundaries around time and schedule. And our pastors love us when they offer clear communication. They encourage our development and growth by not engaging with like anonymous feedback. Well, some people are saying. They help us grow when they say, let's have open and direct conversation and not engaging the rumor. They care for the community when they call us, when they visit us, when they remember something that was coming up and asking, how did that go? They also care for us in indirect ways as well. They might invite others in the community who have a passion for writing cards to join the card team. We trust our pastors to see the gifts that are already growing in our community. And when they invite us to live into those gifts, we all continue to come alive. When we consider ourselves part of the community, the care of the community becomes personal. Because the care of this community, pastors included, is our responsibility. Jesus reminds us again and again and again that another way of living is possible. Yes, Spirit gets up to holy mischief quite often. And Jesus himself retreated from public ministry to pray and to rest. He allowed himself to receive care from people that loved him. Jesus didn't hustle, and he does not ask us to hustle. There is enough. May we practice loving one another, holding on to what is good. May we care for the community as our own, because it is. Amen.